This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
The BFM Breakfast Grill, connecting you to the top people and ideas. Presented by U Mobile.
BFM 89.9, I'm Philip C, and this is the Breakfast Grill. Today, we talk to the world's largest food company, Nestle. On the grill today is Chief Executive Officer of Nestle Malaysia Berhad and the Region Head of Nestle Malaysia, Singapore and Brunei, Juan Arnos. Welcome to the grill, Juan. Now, you have an excellent pulse of how the F&B consumption patterns and trends have evolved in Malaysia. You know, we hear these trends, though. I mean, becoming healthier, going greener, more local. And we also see that in the evolution of your products. So let's just pick one of your staple products, Milo. How has the formulation and product evolved in the past 30 to 40 years to cater to changing consumption trends?
A very good question. Well, it is evolved very respectfully because Malaysians know their Milo. Milo is the largest, Malaysia is the largest Milo market worldwide. And clearly, we need to be very, very careful whenever we introduce recipe modifications. Let's say that over time, we have worked on two directions. Making Milo better every year, and that means that, you know, the milk, the cocoa, the malt, but also the sugar content are optimized to provide a better nutritional content. And then also in addressing the needs of different consumer segments, having different expectations. So we have gone into more other products with the Milo Protein App. We have introduced a Milo High Fiber, more targeted for adults, that has even less sugar and more fiber. We have just gone into the Milo plant-based territory. So we have launched this plant-based drink with almond, which is having a very good acceptance. So clearly that's the trend, no? You know, address different expectations of different consumer segments. Doing it with a brand that has a very, very high relevance in Malaysia.
How much will the Milo derivatives contribute to the overall Milo revenue, you know, let's say in 3-5 years' time? Because I presume now it's quite small.
Yeah, it's difficult to predict. I think clearly when we look at the plant-based territory, not just Milo, because we have also introduced products under Nescafe, we see that that's an area of high growth. I think that really plant-based products, both in ready-to-drink solutions, but also you may have seen our Harvest Gourmet range on modern food solutions. We see that as a very high growth area. Probably will not move a lot the needle of Nestle Malaysia and of the Milo overall business in the next couple of years. But we think that these are areas that are very much worth investing and keep meeting the expectation of a growing segment of consumers going there. Because as you know, there are topics that are top of mind on a growing number of consumers. Health concerns, nutritional concerns. Are these products better for the environment and better for you? You know, we need to cater these growing requirements that are becoming more and more mainstream.
You know, the conversation 3-4 years ago was about, okay, what are you guys going to do to basically drive towards, you know, more healthier-based kind of drinks? And you have answered the call. You have introduced a whole bunch of new products, to be honest. Do you think it's now time for the government to consider introducing a sugar tax? Because the way now we have to drive or incentivize people is to put a financial disincentive for people to shift away from all these sugar-based drinks?
You know, I'm not in policy making. I think that's for the government to assess and obviously for the manufacturers is to abide. I can share with you that actually there is already a sugar tax on ready-to-drink products. And actually, basically, 90% of ready-to-drink products do not pay it because they are well below the thresholds defined by the government. I don't think that sugar tax are necessarily the solution. The solution is that manufacturers take this topic seriously and they constantly work. And this is a long-term journey because as we discussed, you need to find also the taste profile that your consumers are expecting. And that's a delicate work. It's complex, requires a lot of effort from the R&D, from what we call the application groups to find the right recipes. So it's effort, investment takes time. But I think we put really the nutrition and the health of our consumers at the forefront of our priorities. And that's really what drives us. Sugar tax or not, we will continue to work to make our products better and more permissible every day.
You build a point that your consumer trend and your consumer taste is evolving very fast. And this really is a huge demand on you to be truly innovative. But when I look at your top line number, your revenue, right, and I see the revenue growth from 2016 to 2020, you know, CAGR is about 1.7%. Even if you take out the 2020 number, its CAGR is under 3%. Do you really think that your innovation is fast enough? Because when I look at your growth, it is slower than market, isn't it? So you are losing market share.
Remember that we divested the chill dairy business back in 2018, so I don't know if you have adjusted for that. But actually, our good core organic growth has been steadily 3-4%. Actually, the last few years, in a number of categories, it has accelerated because of this rising in-home consumption, as more people were staying at home. Today, if you look at 2020 and 2021, and we have been very transparent about it, or we have a big out-of-home business, what we call Nestle Professional. That's a very sizable business, around 15% of the total sales of Nestle Malaysia. And that has been severely impacted because 80% of their customers had to lock down for extended periods of time in 2020, but even more in 2021. Because when you just do the count how many months or weeks of lockdown this sector has not been able to operate, actually 21 has been extremely tough. So clearly, there are a number of elements of discontinuity that have diluted a little bit the overall top-line growth. But when you, again, peel the onion and you go segment by segment, category by category, where we compete, you can see that our market shares remain very healthy and growing in many cases.
And I think market share is very important to you because that gives you just a bit more pricing power and margin to drive forward. Would that be fair?
Well, actually, market share is important less because of pricing power, because also if you look at the way prices on shelf have remained very stable over time. So we have not kind of taken advantage of having a strong market share in some segments, also because the competition dynamics are very strong. I mean, when you look, for instance, in coffee or in noodles, there are hundreds of players. So it's not that even if you have a high market share, you need to be extremely careful on your competitiveness on shelf. So we remain always very careful on that. We also know that many of our products are important for the B40. And that means that whenever, for instance, we need to consider price increases, we are very mindful because we know that that's going to affect directly their purchasing power. So we are extremely respectful of that. We always try to, manage pricing very sensitively. And it's in some way, we have said sometimes that it's a last resort mechanism. No, we always try rather to leverage the growth, to find internal efficiencies as a way to minimize price impacts. Market share is important basically because it defines your brand relevance. It means that you are more relevant to your consumer. And that's what we have to do.
But I want to ask you a broader question about your portfolio, because you have really a stable brand of well-respected, well-loved brands. Clearly, the strategy has been, let me just milk it. Let me just innovate and basically create derivative products, right? How do you balance your portfolio between market leaders and challengers?
Yeah, but let me just, if I may kind of correct you, I mean, we have not been making anything here. Now, we have indeed large businesses in large markets, but those brands require taking care of them every day, which means that we continue to invest significantly to keep the relevance of the brands, to keep our factories at a state-of-the-art operational capacity. So clearly, it takes a lot of effort to maintain brands like Milo, Maggi, or Nescafe at the level they have achieved. But clearly, we know that going forward into the future, it's very difficult to generate accretive growth with brands that are quite already established. So that's why we are exploring not only new brands, like you have mentioned, Harvest Gourmet or Lively, but also new territories under existing brands. And we have mentioned plant-based drinks under Milo, under Nescafe. That creates a full new opportunity to capture consumers that maybe have lactose intolerance, for example, or people that by choice wants to go into this area. If you look at the Maggi portfolio, for instance, and Maggi is one of, another brand we're extremely proud of, it goes today well beyond noodles. So we are developing solutions that allow to kind of build creativity in everything you cook at home. No? We have a fantastic range of new recipe solutions that is receiving very great acceptance from consumers. So clearly, it's a working brand. Nescafe, again, you have seen, for instance, how the coffee has evolved into soluble coffee, into mixes, and then into capsules, etc., etc. We brought also the Starbucks range, a mentally premium opportunity. So we keep building the portfolio, and that's one of the reasons why Nestle is so resilient.
But do you think the biggest disruption is actually how you engage your consumer? That the structure of your sales and distribution will have to fundamentally change, and that you need to build more direct-to-consumer relationships with your customers, right? You can't really rely anymore on the grocery centers and all that. What's your strategy then to shift towards a more direct-to-consumer approach then?
Yeah, I think I would be careful on projecting what's going to happen. Firstly, because, you know, the offline footprint remains very, very strong and continues to grow. So, again, you can have, there is a universe, a plethora of channels in Malaysia from the shopping malls, but also convenience stores, neighborhood stores, you know, supermarkets. There are, you know, very different channels with different dynamics, but overall we see them with a positive dynamic. So it's not that they are declining. And online is true. All the digital channels have grown quite, they were growing fast already before the pandemic, but that has accelerated clearly these last couple of years. And we have built also our capabilities online. We have great partnerships with Lazada, with Shopee, with Pandamart, so, you know, with basically all the main online retailers. We have solid partnerships, and our business is growing above the average of the company. So going forward, I think that you will continue to see a dynamic online business growing, but I see that the offline channels in Malaysia will remain very, very strong because they give you reach, penetration, they cover the entire territory of the country. So we continue investing in both. So I don't see that it's going to be declining.
On the Breakfast Grill today, we have Juan Arenals, Chief Executive Officer of Nestle Malaysia Berhad. We'll be back after these messages.
You are listening to the BFM Breakfast Grill, brought to you by U Mobile.
Welcome back. On the grill today is Juan Arenals, Chief Executive Officer of Nestle Malaysia Berhad. Now, Juan, if you look at your margins, they have been declining in the past 5 years, you know. It was about 13%, now it's closer to 10%, right? What's the root cause behind the decline in margins?
Well, you need to build your own, and you need to acknowledge also the impacts that we have discussed from COVID. You know, we have invested like 100 million ringgit each one of the last couple of years, so that's significant. But our margins remain quite healthy. And if you look at our dividend policy, it has remained very stable, so our shareholders are getting a pretty decent return for their trust on us. And yeah, we have a particular concern. Also, you need to look at temporary changes in the portfolio. We divested some the chicken business a few years back. We have been investing a lot in our factories. So when you look at the amount of fresh investment we have brought into Malaysia, is quite sizable, and that obviously, when you build up the volume on that investment, that takes a little bit of a short-term hit on margins. But again, our focus is always the long run. Remember, we have been here for 110 years in 2022, and that has been a presence that I think has been good overall for Malaysia, but also for Nestle, that after all these years, the global group continues to trust Malaysia with new investment coming every year. So I think that's what we look at, you know, having, you know, a healthy projection for the future.
CapEx and investments have ramped up quite a bit in 2020 and 2021, nearly $300 million per year. There seems to be this push towards really growing. Does it also shape your future dividend policy then?
Well, firstly, investment in Malaysia has been quite constant over time. If you look back, it's true we have had a ramp up the last couple of years. But if you go back, for instance, for 2016, there was a similar amount because we had this Remuda factory, was a big investment done back then. But every year, we have been investing to keep up the capacity and the competitiveness of the factories. When you have a new product like a Harvest Gourmet with a full new factory, obviously, that gives an upside. Now we have this year a very big project is, you know, basically the capacity expansion in Batutiga for Maggi that basically give us the capacity to grow over the next 10 years. And we have other important projects in ice cream, in confectionery. So we continue to see that Malaysia remains a trusted location for investment or for the group. In terms of the dividend policy, you know, we have maintained it. Our intent is to pay a dividend as high as possible every year in percent of the declared results. And our shareholders know that that policy is executed consistently. So that policy will remain. Basically, we pay around over 90% of the profit every year is given back to the shareholders. And that, I don't see it will change in the short term.
These investments will probably shape and change the way you serve your customers, right? With this investment in facilities there, do you expect to see a larger percentage of your production exported out?
Yeah, to be precise, actually, exports are close to 20% of our sales of the Nestle Malaysia Berhad scope. And some of these investments, for instance, Harvest Gourmet, of course, we will leverage this investment to develop the plant-based category in Malaysia. But this is a regional sourcing facility. So the intention is to basically use it as the base to supply main markets in Asia. No, actually, it's the only other facility that Nestle has in this area outside of China. So there is a big opportunity for growth in a category that is building up.
Right.
Probably, no? So it will take some time.
So the Harvest expansion really actually has regional coverage and all that. Can I just get a sense from you, how much do you expect Harvest to contribute to the top line and bottom line in 5 years' time for the business?
It's a small category at this point in time. Our ambition is to make it a mainstream choice for Malaysian families. If you look at the price points we have defined for the products, these are very good value. Even, you know, they fall within the scope of a large middle class, we should be able to afford these products. So our ambition is big. I will not disclose detailed numbers because they will largely depend on how fast the category develops. No, but we see that in the horizon of the next 5 to 10 years, this should be an important leg in our portfolio.
Let's shift our attention to cost, because one of the big cost items you have are commodities. I mean, we talk about cocoa, sugar, coffee. Look, it's not only going up, but it's super volatile. So could you perhaps share what the hedging strategy is for all these commodities that you have?
Yeah, we always, you know, hedging always need to be wise on when you do it, no? Because depending on the time, it can play against you, no? So hedging has helped us to mitigate a lot of the commodity cost impact in 2021. It also helped us in previous years. But yeah, we have already explained in our last quarterly results release that we see that, you know, as hedging ends in H2, so we will start having some of the impact from the current volatile situation. It's very difficult. I mean, the food commodities are under great pressure. We start to see also the impact of climate change in all this. This increased volatility on the harvest, on, you know, droughts or floods or, you know, many phenomena impacting the reliability of supply. You know, this combines with this crisis in ocean freight because you are well aware of how difficult it is to get confirmed shipments this day, how expensive it has become. And, you know, when ocean freight containers are all over the place, they are everywhere except where you need them. No? So it's a bit of a very difficult moment. Our priority remains to ensure supply. And clearly that comes sometimes with increased costs. Again, we are doing the best we can to mitigate this cost, but we see that probably going into 2022, and not just in Malaysia, but globally, food inflation is going to be a topic. The type of volatility you see in commodities is very important.
Yeah, I think inevitably it will mean passing over the cost to the consumer. But as you said, this is an issue that's across the board, not only a Nestle-specific issue. But you are in an enviable position because you have these economies of scale to secure this hedging contract. So for me, it's how far ahead do you hedge?
This can be commercially sensitive information, so I will not disclose details. But clearly, it's all about timing. For instance, hedging now, when the costs are going up, basically, you would be hedging at very high cost. No? So sometimes you need to be careful on not hedging too much, because if you hedge at the wrong time, you can also make a big mistake, because you will miss the opportunity to capture lower cost if cost improve in the later part of 2022. So again, we have basically all the power of our global network of procurement that is advising on all these topics. I'm confident that whatever is the impact, Nestlé, because of all this collective knowledge and wisdom and access to information, we will be able to be in an optimized position versus other companies. But objectively, the situation is quite complex.
Let's shift our attention to sustainability, because you have, in Nestlé, introduced a whole slew of initiatives. And one in particular is ReLeaf, this whole goal to plant 3 million trees across the board. When you do your calculations, how much CO2 emissions does that offset your current operations?
It's quite significant, not only for Malaysia, but also globally. You know, this project is not just about carbon credits, but it's also making a statement to support biodiversity. Malaysia, one of the biggest heritage that it has is this legacy of biodiversity, more than 8,000 local species. And clearly we see also that there is some responsibility in ensuring that the conditions remain for this biodiversity to continue. No? And that will link also a little bit on the regeneration topic. No? So what we are doing with this, and we have been doing for the last 10 years, because you know this project builds on top of a similar initiative that since 2001 planted 1 million trees in Sabah along the margins of the Kinabatangan River, no? Basically creating a barrier for retention of the byproducts of the palm oil farms. So, you know, now we are going beyond that. So we are going to be planting in East Malaysia, but also in West Malaysia, in the central forest spine. And, you know, what we know is that when it comes to carbon, it's about emissions. So we need to reduce emissions. And we know that Nestlé has, and also we in Malaysia, has this ambition of being zero net carbon emissions by 2050, but also reduced by 50% by 2030. But more and more, this whole regeneration idea is about capturing carbon. You know, the soil, the land, is the most powerful way to recapture the CO2 that has gone into the atmosphere. And that is, again, is something that can also ensure a better and more sustainable food chain, a more resilient food supply, while ensuring livelihoods for farmers. So it's a relatively new topic. Some of the techniques are very old and have been doing forever. For instance, intercropping, planting different species in the same area to improve the nutrients that go into the soil. So what is new is looking at this at a scale, private, globally, in a way that really helps to address the problem of climate change.
Juan, thank you for your time on The Breakfast Grill today. Juan Arnolds, Chief Executive Officer of Nestlé Malaysia Berhad. I'm Philip C, BFM 89.9.
The Breakfast Grill is brought to you by U-Mobile. Unleashing unlimited potential every day.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.